Dybala! He is something else. Di Lorenzo, and still Di Lorenzo! The captain brings the house down. Partenopea champions once again, but the 33-year wait will now officially come to an end.
Ciao ragazzi, and welcome to another edition of Serie A Sit Down, World Football Index's podcast for your culture to go. I'm Frank Crivello, he's Richard Carmen. Ciao, Richard.
Ciao, Frank. How are we doing?
I'm good, although I'm wondering why my screen is so damn foggy.
Breathing heavily. This is a lot of talk about tonight, so you're just hot and ready to go.
I don't know why how I can't clean this off. There we go. That's a little bit better.
We got to invest you in a nice camera, maybe.
That's probably it. So there we go. That's better.
Better. Okay. See? That's what it was.
That's what it was. Breathing heavy after having to digest all of the Calcio news that we have to go through. We might talk about what happened on the pitch. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, things are good. How have you been?
I've been very well. Lots of going, you know, life is good. Life is busy. About to experience my wife going on a road trip, so gonna have a kiss for myself. So we'll see if I survive, if I make it to the next podcast, which is 299, by the way, is the next one. But I've been good. Lots of stuff going on in Calcio as well, especially off the pitch, like you said. But I'm good otherwise. How about you?
It's March Madness. It's March Madness. My alma mater, Wisconsin-Milwaukee, just lost their chance to punch their ticket here a few minutes ago, lost to there would have been the Horizon League, and if they would have won, they would have probably had to play someone like UConn or Purdue or somebody like that. So probably would have been a one and done experience. What drinks are we drinking, Bob? I'm drinking water. I have been trying to I'm not necessarily sober. I'm also not necessarily dry either. I have had some moments where I tried to give up alcohol for Lent. It's not going all that great.
You're a Milan fan. It's hard.
Just as part of the process of getting myself in better shape. So I've lost 20 pounds. So
hey, lose, I gain. You know, we're a family here. So
there you go. It's just we level out here at City.
Yeah, I'm not drinking anything. I'm drinking soda. Or is my wife?
Yeah, we're boring. I know Bob. Bob's probably drinking over his Arsenal winning.
He already says he's drunk as fuck. So good for him.
Yeah.
Mario Gags in the house. Napoli.
The biggest Napoli fan is.
That's
here.
Not true, Mario. You're Interisti. No,
you're Interisti. Yep, that's for sure. So we've got Bob's gained 20 pounds. A lot of hot topics to go over. Absolutely, we've got a big show. We identified the marquee game of match week 28 as Juventus and Atalanta. We'll talk about that. We'll get into the rest of match week 28. And then it's just going to be pretty much all news from here on out.
Lots of news.
So lots of news that we're going to get into. So let's not waste any time, Richard. Now we will have the world's most popular hashtag game. Who won Calcio Twitter? We've got some intro guys in here. Gags, Eduardo, two guys that I anticipate are going to have some pretty sleepless nights, and damn it, you deserve sleepless nights. You haven't had a sleepless night all season, so
yeah,
it's about time you get one. So with
a tough game against Bologna this weekend too. So
they made that look pretty comfortable in the end. So as they've just about made every game this season look pretty comfortable. So but we'll jump into it, and let's start with Juventus and Atalanta. It was the marquee game of the weekend. I'll just run through the lineups real quick. It was Chesney in goal, Gazzi, Bremer, Danilo across the back. This is Juventus' lineup, obviously, a 3-4-2-1. Cambiasso and Ealing Jr. were on the wingback positions, 3-5-2. Locatelli, Miretti, McKennie, and then you had Chiesa up front with Arkadiusz Milik. And then for Atalanta, you had Konecki in goal, who's having a fantastic season. Gimsiti, Heen, and Scalvini across the back. Zappacosta and Ruggeri, the wingbacks, with Ederson and Pasalic in midfield. You had Cup Miners and Ditkaitelare with Gianluca Scamacca. There was some suspensions here on the Juve side, chief among them, Dusan Vlahovic. You had some injuries with Rabio and Alcaraz not being available. So this is basically the side that Juve's forced, to put out there more or less, Richard. And then you go and you look at the Atalanta side here. you know, pretty standard lineup for them. What were your thoughts, you know, when you saw the lineups going into this? I mean, when you look at this, did you consider Juve to be weakened here?
Wait, suspensions? I thought they were just rotating for Champions League. No? Oh, wait, they're not in there.
Oh, come am I.
No, I think the lineup for Juventus was fine considering the pieces that were missing. Was it weakened a bit? Yeah, obviously, because, you know, not having Rabiot or Vlahovic in the lineup is certainly going to hurt. However, I think the pieces that were there were all pieces that could pose a challenge and did pose a challenge in the game. All certainly talented players, and obviously Arkadiusz Milik can score goals, so it's not like you're missing too much there. Obviously Vlahovic is the main guy there, and then obviously not having Rabiot in it, but you got to give Moretti an opportunity to get into the lineup and showcase his ability as well. So no, I think it was an okay lineup for Juventus and Atalanta. Pretty straightforward, honestly. Obviously, when you have, you know, any team that has Koopmeiners and Ederson in the middle there with Pasalic, so those are three wizards on the ball, especially Pasalic and Koopmeiners. Ederson's your workhorse there. And then obviously this season with, you know, Charles Aketelare, who I think he won Player of the Month, I think, for Atalanta or something. He's having a good season, and Karnasecki has been a revelation for them in goal, really pushing Musso to the side. So no, this is it was a good lineup for both teams, and I'm curious to see how the play would dictate. And obviously we look at this and we think, oh, Atalanta's going to dominate possession and Juve are going to sit back and play counterattack. That's what it tells you. But I was curious to see how the game would shape out.
It was kind of the other way around, actually. I mean, but when you just take a look at chances, Juve had more chances, but it was just, I just thought it was an uninspiring first half. The second half is when the game took off. But I think Atalanta had a lot to do with the first half turning out the way that it did. And I heard Bonetti saying at halftime, talking about, you had all week to prepare, and this is what you come out and do. Well, I think a couple factors to this. You know, and first of all, Bonetti's absolutely right, but there's a couple factors to this. Number one, as it pertains to Juventus, we've talked about this for the last 2 years now when it comes to their midfield. They just have a bunch of the same guy. You know, they don't have a guy through the middle that can connect the midfield to the forwards and create danger through the middle. I mean, it's relying on width. It's relying on what creativity you have from Chiesa. I mean, Milan and Pioli out fans, if you want to piss and moan about an identity, look at Juventus compared to Milan right now. I mean, they're far more predictable. And then to that point, I think you have to give Atalanta a lot of credit for how they set up in this game. Because they made Juventus predictable. They said, you know what, you go ahead and have it wide. Okay, we're going to put our numbers in the box. You don't have anybody in the middle that scares us. We're going to get in the box. We're going to pack it in. We're going to let you cross. We're going to let you try chances from distance. We have a goalie that's playing really well. And we're going to make your chances predictable. We're going to make you predictable in attack, and we're going to hope we can hit you on the break. The break part of it in the first half wasn't successful for Atalanta, but the defending was pin perfect. They did a great job of getting numbers over to the ball. They got it, did a great job of staying connected and not allowing Juve, you know, to play through the lines and play through the spaces and force them to be predictable a lot. If you go back and watch the tape of that first half, Juventus were having to create from wide and from crossing. And when that wasn't working out, they had a couple of tries from distance that didn't even get close. I think those two factors, Juve just don't have that creativity in the midfield to unlock that kind of setup. And then two, Atalanta just doing a really good job of making play predictable and, you know, and just taking their chances with a good goalkeeper that Juventus is just not going to score from distance. And they're not going to beat them on crosses.
Yeah, and I think the game plan for Gasperini and company worked perfectly in that first half. Juve really had no quality opportunities. Whatever shots that they did have, Karnasecki was there. Cambiasso was the most lively, it seemed like, of the Juventus players. A couple times he wriggled free of some players who were trying to mark him tight. But for the most part, like you mentioned, they clogged the middle there. They really didn't allow Juventus. They said, hey, you have the ball wide. First of all, Juve is uncomfortable with the ball, but, you know, yeah. Give them the ball wide where they can clutter the midfield, like you said, and really minimize any really difficult chances that Juventus could have created in that first half. And better midfield play could have created that. Like, to your point, if they had a midfielder who could unlock, you know, defenses and midfields, you know, the way some of these some teams do have, then it would be beneficial to them. Yeah, we see in the game some emergence by McKennie in this aspect in the second half, but the first half there was nothing really there for Juventus. Yeah. And so kudos to Atalanta on the road to stifle them as they did. And the question is, could they hold it for 90 minutes? We've seen this in other games where they were successful in this. So we know when Atalanta wants to commit to defense, they are pretty good. But would they want to commit there? And, you know, any lapse in judgment could obviously open game wide open for Atalanta and change the game plan, as we'll find out.
Yeah, and it's and the irony in all of this is that the guy that is being rumored to probably be that midfielder for Juventus in the future scores on a training ground free kick practically, and it's a goal of the week candidate. And,
yeah,
you know, Koopmeiners kind of coming around, they pass to him, he scores. Go back and look at it. I mean, it was very well designed and very well executed. You got to have both if you're going to score on a set piece like that. And I mean, really, that was Atalanta's only real chance through the first 35 minutes of the game. But what a chance it was.
That was one of the better set piece plays you're going to see, like this, you know, training ground moves that you'll see. Perfect pass by Pasalic, perfect finish by Koopmeiners. You can't ask for it any better way. And so, yeah, really well done. You could see the reaction from, who was it? Scamacca. Scamacca was lining up for the free kick with Pasalic. And Scamacca obviously lets it go. And his reaction was like, oh, my God, that actually worked. Really? Like, yeah. Holy shit. But it was a fantastic play. Well, whoever drew that up, well done to them. And Koopmeiners is going to put that away. He's just fantastic. So, great play by them.
Yep. What I would say to... you know, there was a half where, you know, Atalanta, aside from that, created nothing. But we're comfortable in not having to create anything because Juventus wasn't really creating anything significant. You know, so we get to 1-0 Atalanta at the half. Atalanta start, or Juve start to press a little bit more. when they lose the ball. And I mean, first half, they were kind of more wary of Atalanta's counter. So they didn't press as much. Second half, you started to see them press a little bit more. And I think that opened up the counter for Atalanta in the second half. And I think within those first handful of minutes, they produced two or three pretty good chances. I mean, nothing that was going to be dangerous, nothing that really tested Chesney. You know, but the signs were there that, you know, Juventus just need to get disjointed enough and Atalanta put in a second, and this game gets sideways on Juve in a hurry. But they do get a goal. They do a nice job of winning the ball through the midfield, the Cambiasso goal. And this is one of the times where just Atalanta didn't stay connected and didn't switch over. I went back and I looked at this goal a handful of times. Okay, the numbers are even on the left-hand side, but it's the movement of Chiesa to draw defenders and be able to play the outside of the foot pass that split the defenders that completely break the play over to McKennie. And then you've got 2v1 where Cambiasso just has to get behind the defender and time is run. I mean, it was a beautifully executed attack by Juventus down the left-hand side, just staying committed to the numbers that were in front of them, using Chiesa. And then getting the finish from Cambiasso. So great work there. You know, where I get critical of Atalanta, who did such a great job of staying connected the entire first half. You know, where's Heen? Where's Scalvini? I think it was Jim City who kind of got caught stranded in that situation. But the lack of connection there from Atalanta finally did them in. It was the one time where they were disjointed and Juventus took advantage of it.
Yeah, and I think part of it is Weston McKennie's brilliance, right? You know, he's so undervalued as a midfielder. As Eduardo says, I think he's the top assist for Juventus. He's kind of, by virtue, had to have been the best playmaker this year, and he's taken that role and ran with it. You know, you see a guy like Chiesa, and, you know, if Kostic is out there, you look at him, you're like, okay, these guys can play, they make moves. But you think of Weston McKennie as a box-to-box, grind it out, not really being a creative kind of guy. And so you see him having a give and go with Chiesa, ball ultimately gets back to McKennie. You're thinking, okay, whatever, what's he going to do to us? And he had great vision to find Cambiasso. Cambiasso makes his run across the box from his right-wing spot into the box, and McKennie finds him. great look by him. It's great vision by him. Cambiaso with a fantastic finish. But I think people are undervaluing Weston McKennie so much. We've talked ad nauseum about how good Weston McKennie is this season.
Yeah.
But I think throughout the league, and for whatever reason, whether he's American or whatever, or maybe doesn't have the prototypical playmaker type skill set, teams are just ignoring him for whatever reason, allowing him to say, come beat me, right? We see this in the NFL where teams say, you know, they stack the box with the running back and say, beat us with the quarterback. They're like, hey, Weston McKennie, we dare you to beat us. And he's doing it this year. I don't know. I forget how many assists he has this year, but he's doing it at times. And so, you know, you're going to give him an opportunity like that. He's going to take advantage of it, and great vision to find Cambiaso on the goal. And I mean, lovely team goal. Anytime you see the passing like that and Cambiaso putting it away, and that kind of unlocking Atalanta, I think, had a lot to do with it. And like you said, the disconnection was there, and it's probably because they didn't think McKennie was going to hurt him like he did.
Yeah. Do you think your point about McKennie, you know, because you can have the same conversation about how Pulisic is playing at Milan, you know, where you've heard people, even Mike Grella, saying, look, you know, if Milan didn't have Teo and Leal, they'd be a mid-table team. I'm over here looking at how Pulisic has performed for Milan this season and saying, well, wait, what about Pulisic? Is there a is it fair to say that there's still a stigma against American footballers after all this time, even with the level of play that they have elevated to compared to even 10 years ago?
I absolutely think so. I think if you look at any American player in the league, they're always going to have that shtick against them. I mean, you look at Musa. Musa is a fantastic midfielder.
Yeah.
He's just undervalued. He's very silky smooth. He's very similar to what he does to Bennacer, but people don't even value Musa, right? And then you look at Pulisic, same thing, right? McKennie is a different situation because he's a midfielder among a lot of players that are similar, please, right? Rabiot is a similar type. Locatelli is a similar type. And so he gets lost in that shuffle.
Yeah.
But you don't expect him to do anything. And then you look at Milan. Yes, they have Teo and Leao. I'm mixing up the names now. On the left-hand side. And when you look at Pulisic, he's not getting the love. And they're saying, because Leao and Teo are doing so well. That's true, but he's still got to do his thing. Milan had crap for how many years with, you know, Salamakers, what was that guy I used to love, the Spanish player? Name is escaping me. Good thing he's finally got in my memory. Oh my gosh, the Spanish player, the right back. Yeah, Suso. You had.
I'll never forget.
But all the crap that they had on the right wing side, they've never produced, and Milan still have done successful. Now they have Pulisic. When the other two are struggling, he's been carrying the team, and he's been, I think, being American is part of it, where they're like, oh, he's just not that good. And you see Premier League fans making fun of him. It's like, oh, yeah, well, no, your team probably sucked. You know, and being Chelsea, sorry, Apex, I know you're in the chat. But no, your team, you know, whatever team he's on before sucked. And now he's got a chance to kind of flourish, have that chance at taking over again. And you see that when teams are going to heavily mark Teo and Leao for a good reason, he's going to have opportunity, and he's taking advantage of those opportunities. And so, yes, I think that stigma still is very much in the league, and even throughout Europe, I think, overall, it's just a stigma that stays with Americans. And, you know, they kind of earned that right for over the years. I had nothing really to prove. And obviously, Clint Dempsey is one guy who kind of broke that mold. And now you've seen more other players like Pulisic doing it. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be there. It's going to take a long time to come out of that stigma. It's not going to be overnight and say, hey, it's a household name, you know, outside of the U.S. So,
yeah. It's still going to take some time. Who knows what it's going to mean? I mean, if it means, you know, winning, do they need to win a World Cup to shake that? Who knows? But I mean, you know, now coming back, let's come back to the goals. So I think the Milik goal is a classic example of how to read the game by Milik. All right, so what's out there? They're compacting the box. They're compacting a specific area. You know, they're tracking runners that are going into that area to make sure that they outnumber. So when that cross comes in, they're going to win it. So Milik reads this and says, okay, I'm going to back up. All right. He sees where all the Atalanta players. I'm going to back up, and probably backed up with the idea that that ball would be cleared back to him. But what ends up happening is even better. McKennie gets to it first and sets him with his chest for Milik to finish. You know, I don't think you can really blame Atalanta defensively there for that. I think it's clever play by Milik. I think it's Great presence of mind by McKinney to know that Milik is there to lay the ball off to him to let Milik finish the goal. I thought it was a well-worked goal from Juventus. And again, I thought really, really good example of how to read the game and how to read the opponent and put Juve ahead.
Yeah, that was a really nice, well-played goal. I thought, you know, Atalanta did what they could. Again, you know, the ball goes into the box, and it's that creativity of Weston McKennie to see that Milik is available and does anything possible to get the ball to him. And then in this case, chest the ball over to him. And, you know, you hear all the pundits talking about, you know, this goal in particular, and no one's really talking too much about what McKennie did, because it was a great pass. It's a great chest pass, and Milik is going to put that away all the time. He read that so well. He put himself in a position, like you said, to be available. And that's what strikers do. Yeah, the great poachers in the world, they find that open space. All they need is a half a yard, half chance, and they will put it away. Mm-hmm. And people forget how good of a scorer Milik can be. Yeah, he's back up at Juventus at the moment, but he is a striker who's had many opportunities and scored many big goals throughout his career. And so he just finds that pocket, gets where he needs to be, and he's hoping that his teammate can get to him, which they do, and then he puts it away. Puts it on target, and it's going to be in goal. So really well done by Milik to read that play there. It's the strikers in our league, the way they can make those kind of movements and find themselves that acre or little yard of space to get a shot off is amazing, and it's very doesn't get talked about enough.
Yep, for sure. So it's clever, you know, and for Milik, a chance to redeem himself after his red card a few weeks ago, you know, with his opportunity back into the team and rewards. Well, I mean, he's pretty much forced into the selection with the Vlahovic suspension. But then it would be Kup Meiners who would score. I thought it was a nice build up by Atalanta on that goal for Kup Meiners to tie it. But you can see, if you go back and look at it, I mean, Juve switch off a little here. First of all, I mean, they get Jim City forward, and he gets into a space where Bremer's drawn out. And because at the time when you go back and look at it, Bremer's tracking Kup Meiners and he's trying to mark him somewhat. So when Jim City starts to come forward into that space and gets the ball, that draws Bremer out a little bit. So Kup Meiners thinks quick to run behind. If you are as defending as a team, okay, and a man, you know, Bremer's marking Kup Meiners, or kind of tracking him, kind of shadowing him, and you as a teammate have a responsibility to see when he is drawn out of that responsibility and you have to go and fill in. And that player was Danilo. Danilo didn't stay connected with Bremer. If he was, he probably would have tracked that run. And who knows what would have happened there. But nonetheless, Danilo switches off on the situation. Kup Meiners is played in. Atalanta reads it. Kup Meiners is played in. It's a nice ball by Jim City. It's a nice finish by Kup Meiners. You know, but it has to be said, if, you know, each team conceded a goal that, you know, in each time it felt like those were the only moments where they were ever disconnected and got caught with players out of position where they would concede the goal. I thought that for a 2-2 game, both teams defended with a lot of discipline in this game, you know, except for the moments where the goals were conceded. So, you know, but a Kup Meiners goal, a really, capping off a very entertaining and a compelling second half, and, you know, making up for what was really a blah first half, aside from the free kick scored by Kup Meiners.
Yeah, it took away that nice defensive performance that Atalanta had, and they were forced to open up because of, you know, a few minutes span where, you know, Juve caught them sleeping, right, took the lead, and then good response by Atalanta to come back so quickly and get a goal and draw the game up. Yeah, just those plays, like you talked about that play earlier where Cambiaso scored with they kind of stopped playing around for a minute and they allowed McKinney and Cambiaso to get through everybody and score that goal. And same thing here where Cambiaso gets in there in a similar pass where it's just a nice vision, finds an open area where Kup Meiners can run into and slots it away. And so, yeah, for a game where they look to, you know, limit their opponent's opportunity as much as possible, the couple times they switched off, they paid for it dearly. Both teams did. And so you got to give credit to both teams that they didn't have many opportunities, but when they did, they took care of it. And, you know, we had a nice game, ended up being 2-2. And, just a nice result. I know Juventus fans are ruined now because they dropped some points here where you know they were winning at one point, and now they're no longer second in the table. And it's difficult because you overlook Atalanta. Atalanta is still a good team. There's a reason they're battling for the top four, top five. They do have Europe to play for, but they're a good team. They're built very well. We talk about their midfield all the time. Their attack is starting to emerge. They're finally getting wing play again. The center backs are okay, but Karnasecki is kind of making up for some of the errors that the center backs have. And so I think a 2-2 result before both these teams is a good and fair result, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, I do too. I don't know. I can't really look at either team and say, yeah, you dropped 2 points here. I think the draw was fair. For both teams, I think Atalanta for having the presence of mind with the goals that they scored, you know, Juventus, for some of their movement and finally being able to unlock Atalanta in the second half. When you just look at this game, you can look at it statistically, you can look at it in terms of eye test. I can't really pick one team or the other that I thought would, I couldn't leave that game saying, man, that should have been 3 points for this team or that team. It was a very competitive game. It was played at a pretty good level. And it was a nice game and a nice marquee game for what was a great overall weekend here on Match Week 28.
Yeah, Mr. Bob says, was that goal a very Atalanta goal? I don't know. It was a nice goal. I think the first goal was certainly an Atalanta goal. Maybe we didn't see as much of that trick play, but they were known for scoring lots of goals, in the past, and then making just something beautiful. And that first goal was certainly something that. A very Atalanta type goal. Second one, it was a good goal, a good hustle, I think, and a good blue collar goal and find the open space and having Jim City, push up on the play so much as he did. It was a nice goal. I don't know if it was Atalanta goal, but maybe it's the new Atalanta. I don't know.
I Juventus' first goal and Atalanta's second goal were just crazy similar, though, when you look at it. Because it was, if you just break down the area where it happened, it was so identical. And it was 2v1. It was 2v1 in both situations where the defender's drawn out, has no connection from his other defenders. And, McKennie for Juve, Jim City for Atalanta smartly slide the ball into the space for the teammate to run on and score the goal. So good decision-making in 2v1 situations. Of course, McKennie and Jim City are not guys that you're going to expect to try to beat defenders dribbling to score their goal. Those aren't guys that you look to beat people 1v1. So the little nuances of the game, showed up on the, in the goals and in the overall gameplay, which kind of made it, which for me made it a little bit more enjoyable, to watch. So, there's some teams that, there's Match Week 28, 9 other games took place, Richard. It was, it's compelling stuff because there's some games that, are help shaping the top five, because we got to think top five right now with the new Champions League format. And then also the relegation battle is getting hotter and hotter here. So let's take it away with the balance of Match Week 28.
Yeah, you got the games here on the screen here. Let's start it off with Friday. You had Napoli hosting Torino. A difficult game. I think both teams had opportunities early on. Torino... they had certainly had their chances, as did Napoli. I think both goalkeepers made some big saves, especially Milinkovic-Savic came up big in this game. Overall, I thought Napoli had probably the better of the two chances between the two teams. Not to say Torino didn't have some good opportunities, but we didn't get a first goal until the 61st minute, where it was nice combination play, which we saw a lot last year in their Scudetto run. Mario Rui finds Javarscheglia and to make it 1-0 in the 61st minute, goal of the week candidate there. And then minutes later, another goal of the week candidate in the 64th. Ball is loose in the air, and Tony Sanabria, a wonderful bicycle kick, gets it past the keeper. I mean, it's point-blank range. It's hard for Moret to do anything there. I mean, it's basically in your face. What are you going to do? If he makes a save, it's a miracle. And so it hits him, still goes in the goal, but nice technical skill on the goal there by Tony Sanabria. They share the points there. Moving on to Saturday, one of the games of the weekend, really, it was a relegation six-pointer. Cagliari hosting Salernitana. Lots of goals in this one. First in the 12th minute, Gianluca Lapadula back in our lives. Gets a goal in the 12th minute. Thought that he was maybe offsides on the play, but they reviewed it. Nope, he was onside. Lega Serie A's Twitter was going crazy about this goal. It was an okay goal, right? It was nice control by Lapadula to get past the keeper and then evade the defender and score the goal with the tap-in. But, yeah, nice way to get a goal there. And then in the 40th minute, Gaetano gets a goal there. His first, I don't know, it's not his first goal, but it was a nice goal nonetheless. 2-0 lead for them there. And then Shimurdarov, Eldor there getting the goal, make it 3-0. Kyle is like, what the heck are we watching here? Right. 3-0 there. Castanos would get a goal, nice goal in the 56, make it 3-1. Majori would get one just a minute later, make it 3-2. Looks like we had a game on here, but Shimurdarov would get a goal in the 76th minute. Really, it's more about the defender here. Fabio tries to clear the ball off of Eldor's face. I don't know why you would do that, especially when you're the last defender there. Eldor basically goes 1-on-1 against Fabio and just does whatever the hell he wants, breaks his ankle 17 times, and then tries to chip the keeper. Keeper got a little bit on it, but he still puts it away. 4-2, Cagliari win that game. That's a crazy game there. Sassuolo back in the winning streak here, winning mark, I should say. 1-0 victory over Frosinone. Interesting couple minutes there in this late second half where Torvzet appears to take down the Frosinone attacker. Originally, they call a penalty. They go to VAR. They say, no, Torvzet's the one who gets fouled. And as the soccer gods go, it goes onto the other side of the pitch. Towards it, ends up getting the ball in the box. Nice turnaround from the pass that he got and scores a goal. So, it paid off for him and good for him to not get down there. But Sassuolo win 1-0 in that game. Moving on to the other marquee game of the weekend, which I kind of want to talk to after this. But Bologna hosting Inter. We saw a sensational goal of the week candidate by Jan Bisek. It was really a combination between Bastoni's cross and Bisek's header. There's a great photo still image of Bisek in the air when he's getting the header. It's a wonderful shot. Go check it out. But that would be the only goal of the game. It was two teams in a very heavy chess match that eventually the checkmate went to Inzaghi's men. They win 1-0 and really just proclaim that they are, which we already knew this, they are the best team in the league. Moving on to another very entertaining game, Genoa hosting Monza. Goal scoring started in the 8th minute. Pessina with a nice goal, making 1-0 there. But the goal of the week, and that's, I'm just putting my foot down, goal of the week, one of the goals of the year you'll see here, Danny Mota. Colpani makes a nice assist, a nice set-piece play off a corner. Ball comes back to Colpani, crosses into the box, and Danny Mota, a sensational side volley from like no man's land past the keeper. I mean, that was a fantastic goal for me. And that was an 18th minute, 2-0 at that point. Game would settle down a little bit there until the second half where there would be a penalty. Goodmanson gets blocked, but he follows up and puts the ball away in the 52nd, 2-1. Vitinha had a great goal in the 68th minute, make it 2-2 all of a sudden. It looks like, maybe Monza's going to lose this one, but leave it to Maldini to save the day. Daniel Maldini gets the winner in the 79th minute. Nice run by him. Nice movement, really, by Monza on the play. Monza win on the road. Much needed victory for them, 3-2. And then moving on to Sunday, we had Milan hosting Empoli, and you would have thought Milan were in a relegation six-pointer the way this game was playing, but luckily they have Christian Pulisic. We talked about him earlier. He gets the lone goal for Milan in the 40th minute. I thought Okafor had a good showing in this game, but Milan, a very difficult, tight game in a nice 1-0. I don't know if it's nice, but it's a 1-0 victory there for them. Now they leapfrog Juventus, and Milan are in second place in the league by 1 point. Moving on to... one of the head-scratching games of the weekend is one of you knew it was going to be entertaining because it was a relegation six-pointer. Lecce hosting Hellas Verona. Tight game, a rock fight. Folarunshu got a goal in the 17th minute. Nice shot, but it was deflected off and went the opposite direction of the keeper. Gets the goal there. Lecce had a lot of opportunities in this game, I thought. They're missing the last piece. They had some great looks, couldn't put it away. Came back to bite them. Eventually, they lose the game 1-0. Tomo Henry and Diversa, Roberto Diversa, get into a heated argument. Tomo Henry and I forget the Frosinone player, they're going head-to-head, and Diversa gets involved. Henry says something about Diversa's mother, I guess. He got a headbutt. Both Henry and Diversa got a red card in on the play, and it ultimately cost Diversa his job, but we'll get to that later. Hellas win the much-needed 3 points there. Moving on to Fiorentina and Roma, an entertaining game there. Nice way for Fiorentina to come out in the game. I thought they came out very well, very aggressive against against Roma, especially being at home. Ranieri gets a nice goal in the 18th minute, giving the lead. They had some opportunities to make it 2-0 in the first half. Didn't get a chance to. Moving on to the second half, Aouar back into the lineup. Nice play by Roma to kind of set him up for the header. Wonderful goal, put it away there in the 58th minute. Mandragora comes back. He was active all game long. He finally gets in the right place, right time in the 69th, puts it away 2-1. Looks like Fiorentina is going to win. But in stoppage time, I had to double take, Frank, because I thought it was Fernando Llorente. No, it was Diego Llorente with the finish. Sensational goal there in stoppage time to tie the game. Mm-hmm. It looked like vintage Fernando Llorente in that play. Nonetheless, Roma get the draw, and De Rossi is doing backflips. He's happy. Nice performance. I know that's what he wanted to see, and he has some interesting comments after the game about that. And then on Monday, a game that had some implications in the coaching ranks. Lazio hosting Udinese. A difficult game for Lazio. Lorenzo Luca gets a goal in the 47th minute, makes it 1-0. Chances weren't there. I think Udinese did a really good job of, you know, counteracting what Lazio were doing, and then, you know, had some opportunities of themselves. There was another goal, an own goal this time. Zaccagni, nice response back after the goal. Shoots it, goes for a cross, hits off the defender, goes right past the keeper. Nothing Okoye could have done on that play. So Gianetti is the one who gets the own goal in the 49th. But Udinese respond back immediately. Zaraga in the 51st gets a goal himself. Udinese win 2-1. Nahuan Perez gets a red card in stoppage time. But, you know, the story here is Lazio losing again. What are they, ninth in the table or something like that? Udinese, impressive. Found a way to get a result. Those are the games from this weekend. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the relegation battle. Because now you're looking at Udinese 13th, but on 27 points. Sassuolo 19th on 23 points. You had a couple of rock fights there within these relegation six-pointers. The Sassuolo-Frosinone game was tight and was tense. 1-0 there. Verona 1-0 over Lecce. You know, I mean, this is going to be a wild. This isn't going to be a bunch of teams getting separation, and then we know who the three teams are with two match days left. This is coming all the way down to the wire. And you could have both 18th and 19th in play the way this is going right now. You know, we're seeing Lecce starting to lose games, starting to fail to score goals, maybe getting found out a little bit, which is a shame because they played so brightly, you know, at the beginning of the season. They've also had some, maybe a little bit more, you know, challenging games recently. They've had Inter on there. They've had Bologna on there. They've had to deal with those two teams. They had to deal with, you know, Torino is, you know, certainly not going to be a pushover the rest of the way. So they've had a pretty challenging, slate of fixtures where Cagliari, you know, they've been able to play Empoli and Salernitana in the last 2 weeks. Cagliari are unbeaten in four games. Udinese's also in there. And then they got the 1-1 draw at home against Napoli. So, Cagliari has gotten these. So you're kind of seeing a contrast in stretches and how it's impacting their points. You know, Frosinone are just in a free fall right now. The goals have dried up, except for the Juventus game where it was 3-2. They don't defend well. They haven't defended well all season. That's catching up to them. They have the second worst defense in the league behind Salernitana, and who's 20th and who's already probably making plans for life in Serie B because it's going to be 10 games remaining and 11 points from safety is next to impossible, to try to crawl out of that. I find it interesting that we've got teams that are trusting managers who have pulled teams out of this in the past before. Davide Nicola over there at Empoli. You've got, Ballardini at Sassuolo, who we've talked about. Okay. Managers capable of helping the team escape. Let's look at Verona. Verona got to play Lecce. They got to play Sassuolo in their last two games. That's why they've won two straight. But then they take a 2-0 loss, to Bologna. But they go 2-2 with Juventus. They go 0-0 with Monza. I mean, it's I think it's just going to come down to what your fixture list is going to look like down the stretch. And it's going to be interesting to take a look and see, you know, who, I think the teams that have the toughest run in are in the biggest trouble. And that's the obvious thing to say at this point. I think that teams like Cagliari and Verona are getting it done against the teams around them, which are going to help their cause. Mm-hmm. So I still think Sassuolo have the talent to get out. I think they have the tactics with Ballardini to do so and enough creativity to score goals. If, you know, it shows right now, a couple games in charge, the defending with Sassuolo has gotten a lot better. I want to see him do it against a team that's more mid-table and see what happens. And, you know, I think that Frosinone might be in these positions to stay. And then after that, you've got to factor, is it Lecce? Is it Verona? You know, is it Empoli? I mean, I think Cagliari have the talent to stay up. And I think Udinese are going to have the talent to stay up. So, you know, that's my early indicator here with 10 games to go, looking at the relegation battle.
Well, you look at Bob's question, so name teams you don't want in Serie A. So we know what teams have the talent. Over the years, we've said teams like, you know, when Genoa are going down, we're like, you know, they need to go down. They need to refresh. They need to reset. Same thing with Sampdoria. Other teams in the relegation battle at the moment, what teams do you think need to go down and kind of reset? Obviously, Salernitana is one of them.
Yeah, Salernitana for sure.
If you had to pick two other teams that probably need to go down and have a reset, or try again.
Frosinone,
okay.
And
Mr. Bob wants Verona.
Yeah, I think I would just narrowly say Verona over Empoli. I want Empoli to stay up mainly because they do such a good job of bringing up young players and developing young talent. They've got a good youth program. Young players are coming through. Baldanzi's already there at Roma. Cambiaghi's going to be the next guy you hear about. They've got a couple of other guys in there as well. And I'd like them to still see them get Serie A football, you know, and if they get relegated, then they're going to prematurely end up on a Serie A team. And who knows what that does to their development. So, I guess I could agree with Verona, you know, but just maybe narrowly over Empoli. And I, you know, Lecce started so brightly, and it's head scratching now. They're just not what they were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I think that's natural that a team starts so hot and then eventually cools off, especially if you're a team that just got promoted. You know, Sassuolo has been in this league for a long time, and so you know there's some credence to that. However, they've been trending downward for a long time. And we saw, and despite talent, they have the most talent out of any team in the bottom, I don't know, bottom six, bottom seven. But we saw this over the years with, you know, the aforementioned Genoa and Sampdoria, where, yeah, you have all the talent in the world, but if you're not getting results, and the team just needs to be redone, something, I think Sassuolo may be a good product, that they have so many good players that can be useful in Serie A. Don't get me wrong, I think, you know, the likes of Loriente and Berardi, and, you know, you can, Consigli even, so many players on this team that can be of value to any team in Serie A. But I think the model that is Sassuolo and holding on to Dionisi so long was like the final nail in the coffin. Is like, maybe, you know, kind of start over, think about how what Sassuolo means to you as, you know, the management team, and try to start and go with a different method, or try to reset and try the method again with something different or someone unknown, right? The Zerbis of the world, or who was before him? Well, EDF is before him, but EDF kind of made it, you know, applied his trade through Sassuolo as well. So Sassuolo, I think, could be a team that you look at that. You look at Empoli and Lecce. I certainly like the way Lecce plays, and I think they just got to find a manager that's not relegation averse, or someone who is relegation averse, as opposed to someone who always in the bad end, short end of the stick when it comes to relegation. So hopefully no Liverani. I didn't see who picked up on the end of De Versa getting fired, but it's tough. You know, we were saying Verona about a month ago, and they all of a sudden turned it around. Doesn't mean that they don't deserve to go down. I think they could probably use a reset as well. But it's probably, for me, between Hellas and Empoli is the third team. Well, Frosinone, I guess, too.
Sure.
They had such a great run last year, too, in City B. And then the whole Fabio Grosso thing that happened. And then now they got stuck with EDF. They had a good run to start, but they're fading away. And yeah, I don't know. It's tough. It's like three teams that are hard to make that last goal.
Yeah, I'm with you. To Bob's question, who do you want coming back up? Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Parma look like they're going to get promoted and be back in Serie A, and they have probably have the most talent of any team in Serie B.
Would love to see Palermo. Would love to see Palermo.
Yeah, the Sicilian in me would love to see Palermo back in Serie A. Venezia for the marketing and for the social media, I think would be fun.
Yeah.
It's interesting when you look at Palermo because, you know, I'm just looking at some of the better rated players in Serie B, and you don't find a, you know, just, and this is according to SofaScore, of course, you know, forgive me, I can only have enough time. I watch Serie A, I don't watch much Serie B, unfortunately. you take a look at it. I mean, the best rated player is a defender, Pietro Ceccaroni.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you have the goalkeeper, Mirko Pigliacelli, who they've got rated pretty high. Jacopo Segre. So yeah, it's Italian players for sure.
Yep.
And Matteo Brunori is a forward. So those would be the four guys there. You know, I mean, relative no names to the rest of us. You know, yeah. So that might be fun to see. You know, but Petroni has Dennis Mann. They have Adrian Bernabe, who, you know, guys that we've at least heard of. You know, Cremonese, Franco Vasquez is, you know, leading the line for them. The best rated player in Serie B is on Spezia, who are 16th right now, and that's Salvatore Esposito. So you got to think Esposito's finding work in Serie A with another team if Spezia is going to stay down for another year. Spezia's not going to be able to hold on to him much longer. So Amazing Vincent says, please not Cremonese. I mean, I think if I had to look at these teams statistically, I wouldn't want Cremonese either. I think they're playing murder ball in Serie B just to get back up. You know, Parma has the, you know, most goals in Serie B. And then after that, you're looking at Venezia and Palermo. You know, as far as attacking teams, as far as teams that are trying to play attractive, you know, in that division. So,
yeah, I'm with you. I think obviously Parma is a team that looks like they're on the way up, but I'd love to see them back in Serie A. Como, like, to I think it was Vincent's point or someone, I forget who brought it up, but that'd be a great story just because of, you know, the people involved with that team.
Yeah, Como,
Fabregas, Strafezza. There's a lot of commodities there that, you know, that kind of bring some credibility to this team, and so they've obviously earned what they've gotten.
I'm looking at that. First of all, I mean, you look at the attacking line. You got Cutrone, Strafezza, Jean-Pierre Nsame, and Simone Verde are all in the team.
Yeah.
Let's see.
That makes some credibility there.
Yeah, you've got Baselli. He's playing there. Ioannou from a Cypriot player who has got some experience, and then you go to the defenders, and that's where it gets interesting. Goldanaga is a guy we've always picked on.
Yep.
So they better score because I don't know who they're going to stop, and it as evidence. It's crazy to me, you know, through 29 games with that attack line, and I get it. Strafezza has only been there for a little bit, and some of these other guys have only been there for a little bit, but they only have 40 goals. You know, through 29 games, you'd think an attack like that in Serie B would be in the 50s, like a Venezia, Parma. You know, you go look at Parma right now. So, I mean, Como have the roster right now.
And we got Fabregas, who's got the connections too, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then you go to Parma, you're looking at, you know, Colak from Croatia, you know, as a forward, he's got some experience. Dennis Mann, who we've heard a lot about. Mm-hmm. Hernani's still there. Bernabe, who we talked about, who's having a fine season there. You know, the defenders, you know, nobody really of note. Ansaldi is a veteran, obviously, that's in that team. And, you know, Buffon finally retired, so he's not playing there. The goalkeepers are, I think it's Turk, Cicizola, and Corvi. So
the teams are built well, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, they're built, you know, they're both of those teams are built well where they could sustain, you know, and create a challenge to be there for a second season. You know, Palermo has Shaka Traore on loan from Milan. Roberto Insigne is there. Brunori, who's having a good season there. Federico Di Francesco's with them. Mancuso, a former Lecce guy. Filippo Ranocchia is in midfield. Liam Henderson, who spent some time, I believe, was he at Empoli before going to Palermo? I want to say
he
that's
was.
Where
yeah,
he
was. I think he was.
Okay, Segre's another guy they think is having a fine season. And then you go to the defenders. You know, Ceccaroni's got experience. Lucioni has experience. You know, there's enough in there that that teams like that could make a dent if they got the opportunity and if they got the promotion.
Now, two teams that I would love eventually to see back in Serie A, but they're not anywhere close to it at the moment, are Bari, obviously a team that we a lot of us know about, and then Sampdoria. And what's the sad part is, especially for Sampdoria, who were just relegated, they're only 5 points above the relegation spot at the moment.
Yeah.
That's imagine if they get double relegated. That would be, I mean, that would almost be a Parma level. Parma was obviously double relegated for different reasons, but if Sampdoria get double relegated, that would be tragic. It would be tragic.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Now, switching the attention to the top of the table, I guess this is how we'll just fragment Match Week 28. This is the time of year where who gives a shit? Just win. Okay?
Yep.
You know, and that's really all you got to concern you. If you're worried about the defending, you know what? They guess what? So are they, and they get paid, and they're going to go and train. Okay? You know, I had listened to so many people complain about how badly Milan defended against 10-man Slavia Prague, you know, in the first leg. And there's some validity to that. They did. They didn't play as well as you would have expected them to play against 10 men. Yep. But they're still taking a 2-goal lead to Prague, okay, at the end of the day. You know, so it's like, okay, you're taking those problems. You're taking the problems to training with a win behind you. Okay, not with a loss and with a, oh shit, we got to go to Prague and we've got to overturn the deficit. So it makes a world of difference. You know, now when you're talking about the remaining games here and you're talking about the rest of the season, you're just trying to win. All right. And Milan won. They beat an Empoli team that, you know, David, you know what you're going to get with Davide Nicola. They're going to be hard to break down.
Okay.
Exactly. And if you're not playing some of your best players, where they didn't play Leao, they didn't start him. They start Giroud, you know, some of these other guys, you know, they won. You know who didn't win? Juventus didn't win. Bologna didn't win. Roma didn't win. Atalanta didn't win. Napoli didn't win. Fiorentina didn't win. Lazio didn't win. Okay.
Yeah. It's everyone else.
Yeah. All right. Inter won, but Inter just wins all the time. So, you know, at this stage of the season, you just stack wins. It doesn't matter how you get them, okay? Yep. And then you get on to, and then you can get yourself some momentum heading into the summer and heading into next season to build your campaign for next year. That's what Milan did, okay? All these other teams, and I guess I get that some of them played each other a little bit here. They all shared points, okay? I mean, am I wrong here? I mean, I just think at this, we have said this since we started doing this podcast. You get to this stage of the season, it's all about just getting, it's not style points, it's 3 points.
Exactly. Ollie says it wasn't a horrible game, honestly. Yeah, nah, fair. Mr. Bob's point, Inter is a machine at the moment. Frank, we should be on Scudetto watch. How many games until they clinch? Last year we were talking about, I think my original predictions was, I think with Napoli, we said something like week 32 or something like that. I mean, Inter, I thought, already clinched back in, you know, week 10. But officially, I don't know when they're going to do it. They got a 16-point lead at the moment. They had a big game against Bologna this past weekend. Always going to be difficult. We wanted to see how Thiago Motta would come out in this game. Difficult game, but I think it's difficult for him because Inter just are so damn good. Defensively, they shut you down. I think what Inzaghi deserves a lot of credit about, and I talked about this in a reaction video, they pressed them immediately and made the defenders play be awkward with the ball, led to, you know, Christensen making that turnover early on in the game. But what was the telling thing for me, Inter trying to force Bologna to change their plan, and Bologna and Thiago Motta are being too stubborn and not changing away from what their bread and butter is. And I think ultimately that maybe some naivety of Thiago Motta or stubbornness, but his inability to change from plan A to a plan B, maybe they don't have a plan B, came back and bit them because they were able to create absolutely nothing against Jan Sommer and company. And full credit goes to Simone Inzaghi for snuffing out what Bologna do well, and it's completely shut them down. And the game, yeah, maybe it wasn't as entertaining as Juve Atalanta, but from Inter standpoint, that was a perfect kind of chess match where, like, you know, nothing happened in the game really. Even for Inter, they only had a few opportunities, but there was no absolute threat on their goal. And so if you're a team that's trying to win a Scudetto and you have no threat on your goal, that's a good game for you. And it just shows how good Inter are.
It is. It's absolutely. And, you know, not only Scudetto watch, we're also 102 watch, 103. 102 is the mark. 103 breaks it. You know, and will they get that? I said when we had Rafa here a couple of weeks ago, I said, no, they won't. I think they're going to fall short. I think eventually what I think is going to happen is I think they'll go deep into the Champions League. The shift kind of gravitates towards that and may cost them points, but you never know. They all might be looking at each other and they might be motivated. They're, you know, Juventus is a hated rival and they might look at that number and say, hey, we went out, we got it 105. Nobody's touching that ever. And they can go down in history as the greatest Serie A team of all time. So what I would say is, okay, and a couple of people have said it in the chat, if Milan and Inter continue to win heading into the derby, Inter can clinch it on Derby Day.
God, motherfuckers.
Yeah, I know.
I hope they clinch it before. And then rest players. This isn't going
to
happen.
Well, I know if you want to clinch it before, then Milan might have to do the Guard of Honor on Derby Day. Do you want that as a Milan fan?
It's a loss. It's either the Guard of Honor or get handed like a 5-0 loss and then a clinching, right? It's a loss.
We're screwed either way.
You know, congrats to Inter.
Which bowl of shit smells nicer, right?
Yeah, exactly. I know Interisi would want. They want to do it on Derby Day.
Oh yeah,
either way, it'd be fine for them.
Yeah. Well, then you want to ask? Do you want to ask Interisi? Do you want to? I mean, let me ask Eduardo. Okay. Do you want? Let me ask Armenian Interisi. Do you want 10? Do you want one? Do you want to break Juve's number, or what's more important to you, breaking Juve's number or clinching the title? Clinching the title on Derby Day.
Oof. To, you know, winning the derby or beating your rivals for the greatest team of all time, that's a tough one. I'm curious what they're going to say. I would venture to guess, knowing that the heated rivalry with Juventus, they would say beat Juventus and go down as the greatest team of all time. We saw Bonetti already tweeting out today saying, you know, the treble team of Mourinho is talked about in lore because of how good they were. You know, 15 years now from this team, are we going to look at this team the same as we look at the treble team? So that's a curious question.
I'm surprised by this. Both Armenian Interista and
I am too. I am too.
I would think you would want to go down.
It's the greatest team ever.
As Serie A's greatest team ever, because that's in play right now. At least when you look at it statistically, Michael, good to have you with us. Our resident referee is here. We don't have anything to dispute though.
We're disputing this decision by Interisti that they'd rather win the derby, win the Scudetto in the derby versus having the all-time most points in a season.
We're looking at it through red and black colored glasses.
Either way, it's a shit show for us. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I mean, I can appreciate where Eduardo and Armenia and Interista.
I will take the derby loss and the Scudetto for Inter if Milan finishes second.
Well, Eduardo's got a point. Second star on Derby Day, so.
Mm-hmm.
They're going for their 20th. So. Yeah,
that's true. That is true.
And they get to 20 before Milan, and they get their 20th. They get their 20th in front of Milan. So, I guess there's some. Michael's the best team ever. Yeah, who cares about one game? It's easy for us to say as Milan fans because we don't want that. We don't want any of this to happen to us. But I think we're.
To be fair, if they somehow win the Champions League and run, well, they were already running away with the league. It'll be considered one of the greatest, you know, ever. So,
I mean, Bob, when Arsenal won it at White Hart Lane, yes, you'd win it. I remember when that happened, the year of the Invincibles. So,
yeah.
It's crazy, but yeah, I mean, right now, if you're pushing for places for next season in Europe, it's just win. Who cares how you do it? 3 points. You know, I get myself in trouble because I get into fights with people on Twitter because they're mad that they didn't play well enough, and I'm just, dude, it's a win, okay? And I just had, you know, God love them, but I just had somebody try to convince me that the Milan Scudetto from a couple of years ago isn't as significant because it wasn't as dominant as Inter's this year and Napoli's last year. And I'm like, come on, are you kidding me? You know, I said, and he knows who he is, and you know what? We're all good, okay? And if I insulted you, I'm sorry, but I'm not trying to insult anybody. I just don't like being provoked, but it just doesn't make any sense to me that you would say, well, this isn't good enough for us to win on the last. It's not good enough to win on the last day. We want a fucking Scudetto.
I blame Zambo and all of this because I had an innocent tweet just, you know, talking about Milan, and Zambo decides to bring you two in the conversation, and it went crazy after there. I was like, son of a bitch, I can't even tag myself. It's my tweet.
Yeah, you know.
Shout out to you, Zambo.
I didn't care that we won it on the last day. I didn't care. I was celebrating. I was crying in front of my kids when we lifted the trophy. Okay? I wasn't thinking about, we won on the last day. It's just not good enough. I just... Shit, we just won the fucking Scudetto for the first time in like 12 years or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So now he's got me all riled up. Look at this. But no, I mean, it's just the way it is. We got other things we got to talk about.
We got lots of things to talk about.
Before we do that, let's do goals of the week.
Yes.
I'll go first because you always go first on this. So. And then you upset me with your picks, and so I'm just going to get mine out of the way. Now, you don't upset me with your picks. They're always good. Okay, so I've got Llorente's equalizer in at number 5 for me. Nice volley. Crucial moment to get it for Roma to rescue a point. The next two goals came in the same game. I've got the overhead kick from Sanabria in at number 4, and Kvaratskhelia on the end of that nice give-and-go in at number 3. And then 2 and 1 weren't hard to do. Number 2, the training ground free kick from Cup Miners gets it at number 2. And then Danny Malta, we might be talking about that as goal of the season right now. For Monza. Yeah. What a goal. Goal of the week. Probably goal of the season at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly a front runner. I can't think of anything that comes to mind like that. Wasn't it?
Have a gummy. Michael wants me to have a gummy.
Yeah.
Michael, did you read any? Michael, did you read any of this? I just also want to put it on the record because Michael was the one that ripped on me because I didn't have my hat on and I was side to side with Rafa for the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he ripped on my thinning hairline. You know what? My hair was like Rafa's when I was 41, which Rafa is now. Okay. And it just so happened that I was 41 when we started doing this damn podcast.
So it's my fault.
So no, it's these Pioli out fuckers and all these other people that like to pick fights. So.
DiMarco's goal from half line or Mota's goal?
There you go. That's
DiMarco's goal was nice, but I don't think it was close to Danny Mota. So my top 5: Cambiasso team goal for Juventus, a really nice one done by Chiesa and McKennie to set up Cambiasso. Number 4, I'm going with Coop Miner's first goal, really well done set piece as you mentioned. Number 3 for me, the Fernando Llorente like volley by Diego Llorente. In that game, sensational from a defender. I mean, this is a defender, folks. Not a striker. It's a defender. Mm-hmm. And then number 2 for me, I'm going Inter. I'm going Bastoni to Jan Bisek. Wonderful cross by Bastoni. Certainly a good header by Jan Bisek. He's a defender, folks. That's a theme here, apparently. But number 1, Danny Mota, hands down. I mean, that was sensational pass by Cole Ponting and everything technically perfect by what Danny Mota did on that goal for Monza was sensational. It's going to be hard to beat that.
Yep. Now let's move on to some of the news that have gone on here. And we're going to start with Maurizio Sarri sacked with 10 games remaining at Lazio. Really nothing to play for at this point for Lazio unless they go on some kind of miracle.
Well, it's a resigning, right? He resigns.
Oh, he resigned. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for straightening that out. I thought he was sacked. But anyway, I mean, it's easy to point this one out. I mean, I think Sarri was screwed this year. Selling Milinkovic-Savic, not adequately replacing him, not addressing the fullbacks, and a couple of Lazio people are just kind of reading some things on Twitter. You know, Lotito's making the decision on the players, which makes it really hard for Sarri to be able to implement his team. That's at least the vibe that I get. And the players just aren't there to play Saudi ball at Lazio, you know, like they were last year. You know, and, you know, you Milinkovic-Savic was replaced with Kamada, and we learned really quickly that Kamada just did not fit in Serie A, you know, and that it just didn't work out. And, you know, credit to Milan for dodging that bullet, because Kamada was really close to joining Milan. The midfield, they've kind of gotten more into being, you know, a rock fight type of team just out of necessity because of what's available to them. And I don't think that suits the way Saudi wants to play. And it just, it's no longer a fit. And Saudi saw it and said, I'm out of here. You know, it's time to get out. And Lotito, if he wants to avoid Lazio having this hard ceiling of who they are, he's going to have to, you know, from my understanding of everything, he's going to have to swallow his ego a little bit here and allow the manager to have some say-so in how the squad is put together so that they can go out and execute the plan that the coach wants.
Yeah, this is interesting. I like all that you said there. I think, you know, Vincent hit the nail in the coffin, which my starting point was going to be. This team finished second last season. That was a sensational run that they went on last year. And then now they're 10th, they're 9th place. They're 1 point above Monza, who's in 10th, and 2 above Torino. There's a real chance they can miss out on the top 10. This is a team we were at least talking about going to Europe, not being out of the top 10 altogether. I think, and I'm kind of with Anthony, I think the players gave up on Saudi. Yes, it's not going to be Saudi ball. So both get the blame, right? Well, Lotito as well. But you talked about Lotito already. So Saudi, he's adapted in the past to whatever team he's on. He's not always been able to play Saudi ball, right? Went to Chelsea, he didn't play Saudi ball. He had to adapt. When he went to Juventus, he had to adapt. He hasn't adapted a lot, so he's tried. Now, granted, Lotito's kind of hamstrung him a little bit, right? So that's part of it. So there's a blame there where Saudi not really adapting well enough. He's adapted some, not well enough. I think also the team is not performing what they should be. Yes, they have Kamada instead of Miklos Savic. Their attack is really good, though. Yeah, maybe Chidomoli has been hurt this year or whatever, not up to his standard. But, you know, you got Castellanos there. I mean, obviously, Zaccagni is a wonderful player, as is Felipe Anderson. Isaacson has been a revelation for them, you know, all of a sudden in the last couple months. Provedel has had a down of a season, but he's still a good keeper. But it's like the lack of buying them good defenders, not really replacing a SMS with a comparable player. I do like Kamada, but he, as I think Mr. Bob pointed out, he's only good in certain systems, and this is not the system for it. And so the fact that the players, I mean, look at this game alone against Udinese. They had some chances. They just didn't finish them. They didn't finish their chances. And this happened last year with Roma, at least at the beginning of the season, where they were struggling to score goals. Lazio, I thought they were going to get out of this funk. I picked them to, you know, to finish in the top four, and they're nowhere going to be near it. So I think as the blame goes all the way around, ultimately it falls on the shoulder of Lotito, as you mentioned, because he didn't set up this team for success. He set it up for failure. When you sell all your best players and you don't replenish them with like type players, you can find them for the cheap. Lots of teams in this league are doing it, right? Look at Atalanta. They just find everybody on the cheap and then they turn them into superstars. So it's Lotito, it's Sarri, it's everything. And I think, to Vincent's point, you know, leaving your team at the end with, you know, how many games still left in the season? 6-7 games left in the season. That's a bit of a joke. He should have waited until the end of the season. Suck it up. Yeah, you walk away at the end of the year. Don't leave your team hanging with a couple games to go. What are they going to do? I mean, maybe they pull a Roma and go on this run with whoever replaces it. I thought maybe Tommaso Rocchi would be in it, but maybe Klose. Who knows? That could be it. That could happen. They're not going to get Europe. So I don't know. It needed to happen, but not at this point in the season, I think.
I should point out they are still in Coppa Italia. They've got the semi. They're in the semis against Juventus.
So who's going to come in? Who's going to do well against Juventus? Saudi had a chance.
Mm-hmm. The goals dried out. I mean, 28 games, just 33 goals. That's just not Saudi-like. Regardless of whether he plays Saudi ball or not, And I think that they resorted for defending, keeping you out for a lot of games. They stacked together a bunch of clean sheets, And Provedel was, you know,
blaming Pulisic for the loss. Yeah, that's probably why. You know?
Yeah, Provedel was being credited, you know, because he was in excellent form, making saves and keeping Lazio in a lot of games too.
Yeah,
when the goals weren't coming, and you saw Lazio winning a lot of games 1-0 this season. So it for Lazio, the owner needs to allow himself. Lotito needs to allow himself to bend his ear to whatever manager is going to come in and take over. And allow him to have some say so in who the players are that come in, and you know, I think they've got to just clean house with what they have for staff in terms of identifying players, in terms of scouting. I mean, I think that you know, when they try to go and get reinforcements, because nobody that they brought in has really worked out. You know, Isaacson started to come on a little bit. Castellanos has been a bust.
Has he gotten the service? You know,
that's part of why he's been a bust.
Yeah.
They thought they were solving the fullback problem with Pellegrini. That hasn't been great. It's been serviceable at best. The strength of their team right now are their two center backs. Or three when they can rotate, when Casali's on form, Romagnoli, and then Gila Fuentes, and then Provedel in goal, and then Luis Alberto as their playmaking midfielder, you know? And then you get a little bit of Zaccagni and Isaacson on the wings, but you don't see as much as you'd like. Yeah. And that's the extent of it. That's the extent of Lazio right now. And there's a lot of holes in this team, and the manager that comes in, I have to know there's going to be reinforcements coming in the summer. And I have to be involved in the process of the reinforcements that I would want.
Yeah, and if someone in the chat said earlier in the podcast, they said, imagine a derby with De Rossi against Klose. That would be interesting. I don't know what Klose... Yeah. Klose's only had minor roles thus far in management. But hey, so did Zidane until he got this step up, right? Not comparing the two, I'm just saying. But yeah, we'll see where Lazio go from here. I just don't like the resignation with, you know, 6 games to go or whatever it is. Or what week are we on? 28? Yeah, we're getting there.
Yep. We're coming up on 29.
Oh my gosh. Damn, season is flying by, Frank.
It is, isn't it, huh? It is. Okay, so the next topic, there was a raid at Casa Milan. Yep. Why don't you share what that's about? I read snippets, but what's going on at Casa Milan?
So the main point of the raid, from what I've been reading from tweets, is that it's about the sale of Milan from Elliot to Redbird, and that maybe that Milan were hiding, or maybe in this particular Gazzidis and Furlani were guys who were hiding from the Italian, you know, SECs, you know, so to speak, not giving them all the documents and stuff like that. And so maybe some kind of financial crimes were being played here, and maybe the rumor is that they're thinking that Elliot still owns Milan, and Redbird's actually not an owner in it, and it's like a fraudulent sale. So that's why the raid was there, to see, you know, all the offices and blah, 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 blah. That's the main gist of the story. There's obviously some other things. Obviously, Interisti and Juventino are like, ha-ha, I got you, bitch! But I'm curious what your thoughts are upon hearing the news today about the raid at Casa Milan.
Elliot has come out and said that some of the accusations are baseless. Some of the things that I guess that they're investigating are baseless. I don't know enough right now. I mean, and I admittedly, all we know is that Furlani's being investigated, and Gazzidis before him. And I think some of it had something to do with whether or not Elliot still has an involvement with Milan. At an illegitimate level, and Elliot has come out and said that's false. So I think this needs to be unpacked a little bit more before we can have any kind of conclusion of where things are going. And it seems like there's enough evidence for the case.
I would disagree from what I've seen, at least. There's a journalist who covers law, in particular Milan, Felice Raimondo, and he had several tweets about this. I've been following his stuff for a while, and he seems to know his stuff. But the tweet in particular was saying that there's actually no risk at a sporting level. The investigation concerns the CEOs Furlani and former Gazidis, as I mentioned. They risk the sanctions provided for by Article 2638 of the Civil Code. Elliot, moreover, has no longer exerted influence on Lille, which was what really kind of drew their ire for some time. This is even before 2020. So go ahead and hypothesize violations of timeshare regulations and imagine it to say that least. The investigation seems to me based off on anything, is not built on anything solid foundations. However, perhaps it could accelerate the entry of the Air partnership in place of Elliot. So what it was is that basically, the way it reads out is that Red Bull owns 99.9% of Milan, while Elliot doesn't own anything. Elliot's still involved because Red Bull are paying loans to Elliot, who's a hedge fund, and so that's why they're involved, and that's why it drew the ire of everybody else. I mean, remember that Elliot and Red Bull are known commodities and been trading in the U.S. for a long time, so I would find it very difficult that these two known commodities are going to do something this kind of shady, something shady, when they have all kinds of investment. It sounds really foolish to me. Also, it's also part because Milan are looking for other stakeholders, the minor stakeholders, in this case, Arab influence, Arab money. And so they're like, oh, what's going to go happen now? Well, Milan, I think from what I read, was that Red Bull will go from owning 99.9% of the team to owning 54% of the team, while the Arab team will come in and own like 47, 48% of the team. That way, Elliot would be completely gone because the Arabs would take over the money that Elliot's getting loaned out, and then part of that would go to the Arabs and Elliot to pay that, or to Red Bull to pay it off. And so Milan would get more money in eventuality because they'll have Arab money as opposed to, you know, just a hedge fund guy. And so this has drawn the ire. I guess the way they did the paperwork, the Italians were like, well, why weren't we told about everything? And it's like, well, apparently there is, because I think there's a place like Delaware where all this stuff is handled, is at, and that's where the SEC knows that Red Bull and Elliot work like this and many other companies in the U.S. And so this is like nothing really new. So I think it's a bunch of nothing until I see something. Now, you know, with all these kind of cases, show me some proof and I'll lend some credibility to it. But this to me right away flashes as this is a bunch of nothing. And I could be wrong. And, you know, I'll gladly eat my words, but it looks like nothing.
The key thing to all of this is that nothing is being violated at a sporting level where it's going to cost Milan as a team. Okay, so there's not going to be any delusions about points deductions or bans from European competition or any other sanctions like that. Okay, this is basically investigating specific individuals for business activities that have nothing to do with the sporting activities. This isn't like what Juventus did with their overinflated transfer sales. Okay. This is more of a civil business level than it is a sporting level. And that's the way we're interpreting it. I think some things still need to be unpacked here. And I think that there might be some more from what you say, from what your contact is, your source.
My informant.
Saying, no. Your informant.
I'll share the tweets that I'll share the comments and tweets from
Richard's connected like that.
Yeah.
This is all civil, and it's probably going to center around a couple of individuals who might face some kind of account, you know, some kind of
technicalities, probably some technicalities that they weren't followed or something. Maybe.
Sure.
But nothing so with the team will happen. I would think.
Those that are cheering for a point of points deduction or the fall of Milan or anything like that, I don't think we're going to see anything to that level. So,
but it's possible. Yeah. You never know.
Moving on to men behaving badly, we had a manager sacked for headbutting another player. And then what was the other one?
It was ADL. So there was an interview going on with Politano. ADL comes over angrily, takes Politano away from the interview, yells in the face of the reporter, and then shoves the cameraman. And it's like, what are you doing, man? Come on. Like, have we learned nothing?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's more comedy than anything. You know, Diversa loses his job, rightfully so. You can't be in inflicting, no matter, especially as a coach. I mean, you're an authority figure. You're a figure as you're a manager. You're a mentoring figure. You're not setting the appropriate example. with that kind of behavior. So I think that Lecce were justified in sacking him. ADL, I got to know what really was going on to have provocated him there, you know, in that situation. So it's ADL is in Italian Florida.
His daughter is actually from my area. She grew up here. Okay. Giada? I forget her name. Whatever her name is, anyway.
Giada De Laurentiis?
Whatever the daughter's name is, yeah. She became chef, big on E. She was an E.
She's not the chef, is she?
No. I'm mixing up the chef with the daughter.
Yeah, I was going to say, the chef is Giada.
The daughter was into fashion and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, no, I agree with you. I think, well, first with ADL, he's getting praised for what he did, you know, like, well, why? No, he shoved the cameraman. He probably shouldn't have done that. He should not be getting praised. He should not be getting interviewed on CBS afterwards as a, well, hey, congratulations. Look what you did, jackass. No, you should not. No one should be. You should act more professional, especially someone in an ownership role or a manager role. And Diversa, the same thing. Diversa, I don't know what was said. It could have been a Matarazzi Zinedine Zidane moment, for all we know. I don't know. But still, you got to have more composure than that. Roberto Diversa says, I didn't headbutt him, but you know, the FIGC reviewed the footage and they said, yes, you did. You get four game suspension. And so he was sacked from Lecce, and whoever picks up Diversa going forward will have to sit him out for four games. So good luck in the job, buddy. But yeah, it's I don't know what's going on with guys these days. Maybe it's something in the grappa. I don't know. But seeing a manager headbutt something, you think this is something you would see in like one of the minor leagues somewhere else in the world, or maybe in a Turkish derby or something like that. But not in Serie A. And yet you hear you have Roberto Diversa doing that. It's like, what the hell, man? Come on.
Yeah, I know. For sure. Moving on to Europe, as we start whipping through all of this here, we had Napoli get eliminated today to Barcelona. I mean, same thing. I think we kind of expected this, but I thought that, like last week with Lazio, I think Lazio did everything they could against Bayern. Bayern were just that much better. I got to commend Napoli's performance today. You know, Barcelona came up with some moments of brilliance that have them being just that much better right now. You know, Napoli certainly had their chances. I think they put up their fight, you know, but in the end, trying to win in Barcelona, we thought that would be too much. It ended up being 3-1, but I'd say, you know,
could have been 2-2.
Could have been 2-2. Napoli had their chances, but I mean, I commend Napoli.
3-3.
Yeah. Or even 3-3. Yeah. To your point. I commend Napoli. I think they went out bravely here. Meredith played outstanding. He kept him in the game. Fratichelli was all over the place, did a great job. You had the goal from Rachmani. You know, but there was plenty of other chances. I think it was the Lindstrom header.
Lindstrom's not gonna sleep tonight.
No, he's not. That was the chance to make it 2-2.
Yeah.
So what was this where Napoli gifted Juve qualification to the World Club Championship?
Yeah, something about where they're on the table and like points and something like that. And so, like, I could care less about the Club World Cup, but yeah, apparently Inter and Juve are heading now to Club World Cup instead of Napoli and Inter. So, I don't know. I've not been following the Club World Cup because it doesn't interest me at all. I think Napoli were valiant in this game. They had a moment of, you know, you mentioned brilliance by Barca. It's also a lapse in judgment by Inter by Napoli for what, a 2-minute stretch. And they conceded two goals like just like that, and you know that's all it takes. That's all it takes. You have to have your your head on 90 minutes on a swivel. You know, even 90 minutes plus in many cases, as you saw in the Arsenal Porto game. So they're playing catch up at that point. They did well to, especially in the second half, to kind of get back into the game. I thought Barcelona did really well in that first half, but second half, Napoli grew into the game, had their opportunities, got the goal like you mentioned by Rahmani. But they had a couple of sitters there. Like, there's a play where ball gets in the box. Osman reads it very well, finds Anguissa. And Anguissa took too long to get the shot off. Credit to the defender. And then that Lindstrom chance where he's wide open for the header and gets it wide. It's like, oh, my goodness. You know, we've seen him score those goals, too, not only in Serie A, but also I've seen him in the Bundesliga score those goals. And so, yeah, he's not going to sleep well. And Even had he scored, you know, chances are Barcelona probably would have scored again, whether in regulation time or in extra time. That last goal was vintage Barcelona, where Sergio Roberto gave it over to Lewandowski. It was just a brilliant goal there. So, you know, kudos to Napoli. They did fight valiantly. They fought hard, but ultimately not enough. You know, they needed a miracle. Yeah. Then to get it. I think they're going to miss the opportunities that they had at home. Are gonna sit with them also difficult, because they should have gone away with the lead in that game and made it easier for them in the second leg. But you know, it is what it is.
Now we move on. I've been saying it since the first leg. I think we've got a draw written all over the Atletico Madrid Inter game at the Wanda tomorrow. That's what I'm sticking with. I think it's going to be 1-1. I think that Inzaghi was able to rotate his team successfully and get the win against Bologna. Now they can turn around and focus on playing against Atletico Madrid. It's an Atletico Madrid team that they lost to Cadiz, but before I get carried away with it, let me see the team that played out there. Well, they had Morata and Depay up front. They had a decent squad that they put out there. As they're trying to fight off, you know, they're trying to fight off Athletic Club right now for fourth in La Liga. So, you know, falling at Cadiz, maybe not the biggest confidence builder, but then I think also you think of a team like that with the veterans that they have, it's going to be a tough game, to Eduardo's point. I got 1-1. I think this will be every bit the rock fight it was in the first leg. Then I think Simone Inzaghi doesn't mind living in that, and I know that Cholo definitely loves living in that. So what do you think?
It'd help if I unmute myself there. Arnautovic won't miss those chances. I think it'll sort of be a tough game.
Arnautovic isn't going to get those chances this time.
Yeah. Two statistics jump out for this game, right? One, Diego Simeone has never lost in Champions League at home, I think, in a knockout stage, if I read that correctly. And the second is Inter haven't won in Spain in knockouts in a long time. So neither are good statistics for Inter. However, this is, as we've talked about, many people have talked about, it is a different Inter. They are one of the best teams in Europe, defensively, offensively, managed, whatever aspect you want to call it. They're one of the best teams in Europe. It's going to be a difficult game. It's going to be a rock fight. I think it's going to be one of those entertaining rock fights where it's, you know, defensive masterclass by both teams. You said a draw. I would not be surprised Inter squeak out a narrow victory. Just because they have the talent to do so. And I think defensively, they're good enough to shut down the talent that is at Atleti. Atleti has some good goal scorers. But I'm gonna give that a slight advantage. Would you say 1-1? Would you say was the score?
I got 1-1. Yep.
Yeah, I'll go. Shit, I'll go 1-0 Inter.
Okay, that's a fair result. I could see that happening too. So that's our prediction. Moving on to the Europa League, we got three teams left there. Milan taking a 4-2 lead to Slavia Prague. Milan able to rest a handful of guys in preparation for this game. It's a Slavia team that, when you take a look at them, they did lose. It was a neutral. I think the Czech Cup's a neutral game. But when you look at them at home, at least in the Liga in the Czech Republic, they're winning there and they're scoring goals. They haven't scored fewer than three goals in their last four games, and they've all been wins. Now, of course, that's the Czech League. But some will come back and say, well, Milan haven't defended particularly well, so that's got to be a concern for you too. But I can see Slavia winning this game by a goal and Milan going through by a goal. I prefer to just say this will be a draw. The reason why I think is that I think that Milan are going to concede some goals here just because Slavia are going to have to go for it. And they're going to come out and attack and they're going to feel good playing at home. But they're going to open themselves on the counter, and Rafael Leao is going to be out there. And you've got Giroud, who's going to play in some high points and is going to be able to target. You're going to be able to target off of him. And I just see Milan getting some counter goals here that make it very hard for Slavia to be able to overturn this tie. I will say 2-2. Be more than happy with it to see Milan in the last eight. So that's where I'm going with it. I mean, Milan may win narrowly too. But with the way Slavia can play at home and with them going for it and them going on the attack, and I think you do have to have some concern for the way Milan have defended. I think some goals are going – I think there's going to be a lot of goals in this game. And like I said, 2-2 is, I think, a reasonable expectation and enough for Milan to go through.
Yeah, and Vincent, we are very familiar with Prague and the atmosphere that they create. It's, you know, one of the daunting places to play in Europe for sure, especially on the road. Yeah, you know, we saw Slavia's ability to score goals – even a man down against Milan. Now, Milan played very horribly in that game, but you have to give a lot of credit to Slavia to keep pushing forward as they did. And Milan were responding every time a goal happened, but nonetheless, goals came. Two goals came. So, but yeah, unfortunately, we know this Milan team too well. They never make things easy for us, and that's probably another reason why we're losing our hair and gaining weight and all that stuff and getting gray. It's not going to be easy. My prediction is going to be Milan are going to make us ultimately sweat and be very near to a heart attack. I'm going to say Slavia wins 2-1 and Milan gets by with one goal
victory. Yeah, yeah, I could lean towards that, but I think a score draw. I think a score draw happens here. So, quick one: Brighton, Roma. Roma's up 4-0. There's no way they blow this.
Well, we did say this about Arsenal Milan many years ago, right?
Sure. I think Brighton's going to win. I think Brighton's going to win 2-1. Okay. I think Brighton's going to win 2-1, which is not going to bother De Rossi or Roma at all. And they go through.
Yeah, I think as long as Roma have a respectable showing, and that doesn't mean win. It could mean like 2-1, 2-2, you know, as long as they keep it within a goal or whatever, I think they're fine. And I think it will be. I don't see Brighton blowing them out, especially the form that they're in. That was a sensational showing by Roma in the first leg. Did not expect that at all. If anyone's going to get 4-0 lead, I thought it was going to be Brighton. Doesn't mean it can't happen, but I think Roma are going to do enough just to keep the game fairly close, and that way there's no contest in this tie. And so, yeah, there's no chance that Brighton come back.
Atalanta Sporting. Wow, I'm back and forth on this one because I've called Sporting a dark horse in this competition.
So is Atalanta, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, and you can say that, can't you? We're going to penalties on this one, I think.
Okay.
I think this will be a draw over 120 minutes. I actually want to, you know, say that Sporting are going to go through. I just am high on their team. I think they've got very good players. And that's a lot to have very good players too, but I'm right now just ever so slightly leaning towards Sporting going through, but I think they do it on penalties. I think this game ends in a draw. They go to extra time, and then I'll go with Sporting. I mean, Bob, as an Arsenal fan, knows everything about Sporting. Bob, by the way, your Arsenal, good thing that you don't play in the Portuguese league. Sporting last year, Porto this year. I mean, even though you outlasted them on penalties, it's. I think you want to break from Portuguese teams at this point. Uh-huh. But I would say draw goes to penalties, and then Sporting win on penalties.
Okay. Atalanta are at home. It's going to be tight. The first leg obviously was. Let's change things up and just say, I'll say Atalanta win at home 2-1. They find a way, you know, through Coop Miners and Company to get a result just ever so slightly.
Yeah. Bang the drum. Go ahead. Bang the drum for Serie A. I mean, I
that's right.
Believe me, I want Atalanta to go through. I want Serie A to fight the good fight. I'm high on this Sporting team. I like the talent that they have. So, Fiorentina, home. To Maccabi Haifa in the Conference League. They won the first leg 4-3. I mean,
wow.
Yeah, defending was optional, apparently.
Yeah.
I'm going with Fiorentina to close this out. They win 3-1 qualify. Maccabi Haifa will score, but Fiorentina will have too much.
Mr. Bob, no, I did not hear. I knew he said something. I don't know what Ponce South said. Let us know in the chat. Yeah, in terms of this game, yeah, I think Fiorentina is gonna find a way to get a result. I think that was way too close for comfort in that game against Maccabi Haifa. But I fully expect Fiorentina to get a result and probably by two goals. That's my prediction. So they went 3-1 or something, 2-0.
All right, so we have gotten everything done except for the most important part, the world's most popular hashtag game. Okay. Wow.
Okay.
All right. Shots fired. But let's move on to the world's most popular hashtag game. Who won Calcio Twitter? We've got a pretty pretty light batch this time
around. Light batch, but hopefully it is a good batch. So let's start off first with, originally Marcus Thuram sent a tweet out. It said, what did the tweet say? It said, he tagged Kylian Mbappe and said the Ninja Turtle. He tagged him on the Ninja Turtle sponsor because everyone calls Kylian Mbappe a Ninja Turtle. And so he tagged Kylian Mbappe in that Ninja Turtles on the Ninja Turtle sponsor. And so Kylian Mbappe responded and was like, "What?" So that was pretty funny. That was pretty funny. He responded.
Responded like, "Who are you again?"
Two French players going at it there.
Teo Bonetti, Roberto De Zerbi coming back to face an Italian team, and it's a picture of Giampaolo.
Oh, that's good. That's good. All right, moving on. Big Show. So original tweet was from Hannah. It says, a historic Juventus events on this day. And then he says, where's July 4th, 2006? July 4th, 2006. Oh, Big Show.
some derbies just die hard, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see. So now we move on to Napoli Sansoni. Smile if you've significantly underperformed your expectations.
You got Chiesa and Scamacca both smiling in this. Chiesa.
And last but not least.
So Nick Diani on February 13th said, 40 days, 40 compliments for Sardi. My Lent sacrifice starts tomorrow with Bayern. And then today he said, for anyone that isn't religious, explain this miracle because he's gone. That was pretty good.
Oh, my. Is Bonetti getting in the win column?
Is Bonetti... It's either him or I like the Lenten comment as well. But either way,
I'm gonna go with Bonetti. I think we're gonna give him. I think we're gonna give him a win.
Yeah, anytime you bring our old friend back to life.
There you go.
Oh my goodness. Last time I was meant to shout out some people last time. I don't remember who. Now I forgot. Every time I'm coming to these podcasts, I'm like, oh, I got to shout out this person. And then when I get to the show, I'm like, who the hell are they talking about? So I'll have to just tweet these things out as they come to me. But I always forget these things. Hey, it's getting closer. We're at episode 298, two episodes to go. International break is looming on the horizon. So once we nail down a date and time for episode 300, we will let you know. It'll be a different time than our normal podcast, just because we'll try to get some friends from different time zones in, squeeze them in. So and it could probably be a longer podcast and might not be talking much couch of the day, but who knows?
Richard and I are going to iron that out here in this week, and we'll keep you all posted. I mean, I wouldn't even rule out a watch along for the Italy Ecuador game a la Manning Cast, where we bring in people. That would be,
I think, I said bring in Eli and Peyton for that too.
We can do that. We can see if they're free.
Yeah,
there's no football season. It's just free agency.
We got connections with ESPN, right?
I think so. We'll have to look. But we'll figure that out. So Matteo Bonetti getting his first Who Won Calcio Twitter win. Congratulations, Matteo. You got to get back on the City. I sit down here soon too, by the way. You're gonna get the UK Lecce guys again. We had them earlier in the year.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're gonna bring them around again or not. We'll see. We'll kind of get. Maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to get them on, get their perspective on the relegation fight, how they see things, the Diversa situation. Yeah, definitely. So, all right. Well, I guess we can put a bow on this edition of City Sit Down, where we have our own channel on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud. We're also on Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere there's podcasts. There's City I Sit Down. So if there's one that's your regular go-to and it's not working, there's other means to get City I Sit Down. So be aware of that. Here on the YouTube channel, this is your first time watching us and you had a good time. I know you did. Subscribe to the channel. More importantly, drop a like. We appreciate that. That helps us out a lot. And then make sure you hit the notification bell, because that will give you the heads up when we are on live. And that is generally Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or thereabouts. Although we will have a special 300th episode on a Sunday, like we said, on March 24th. Again, a Spezia guy in the Champions League quarterfinals. Okay. Now I've lost my train of thought. I gotta stop doing this. Gotta stop looking at the chat when I'm trying to trying to wrap the show up. So, but anyway, at CityOz Sit Down on Twitter or X, whatever you prefer to call it, also on Instagram, and then we're also available at on Facebook. I'm FTC underscore 21. Richard, where can they find you?
R underscore K-H-A-R-M-A-N.
Excellent. Now, I will tell you that my tweets are protected because I kind of came under attack from some unruly Peoli out people, and I just decided enough's enough. I don't need my tweets to be public anymore. So I'll stick with the people that I can at least tolerate. If you do want to put it, you just request. I check it regularly and I'll let you in. So I think that's it. We'll do this again a week from today, 9 p.m.
Yeah, let's do it.
Amazing. We'll have, if Inter qualify, we'll have reaction to their draw. We'll have reaction to the Europa and conference draws as well. We'll have reaction to next weekend's matchups and maybe get everybody prepped for episode 300 and the Italy friendlies coming up. So until that time, enjoy the Inter game tomorrow. Enjoy our teams playing on Thursday. And the upcoming games this weekend. For Richard, I'm Frank. As always, make sure you're telling your paisans about us. Ciao. Sul fondo mette in mezzo la caccia di Lorenzo e la vuole passare.